Hello and welcome to episode 26 of After the Breach podcast. We're your hosts, Jeff and Sarah, coming to you from San Juan Island, Washington. And Jeff, you just returned to the island not too long ago from some fun whale-related activities, and we're now back and going to chat about it.
Yeah, we're going to talk about my trip to the Silver Bank, Dominican Republic, and catch you up on the latest sightings that have been going on here around the San Juan Islands. But yeah, I've been back for just about a week.
We're glad to have you back.
Oh, I'm glad to be back. It was not a fun travel day getting back. It was one of those.
No, it sounded like a pretty complicated one.
Yeah, it took all day to get home. I think a combined 8 hours of flight delays, and didn't look like I was going to get home.
But you did.
But I did.
And I'm sure there's podcasts about like travel woes.
Oh, I could be a special guest on a podcast for travel woes day.
But luckily, this is a podcast about whales. So
it is. The ironic thing is about that travel day home is I missed my connecting flight by literally 3 minutes. They closed the door 3 minutes before I got there.
And because of that,
I actually got home that day because it turned out that after a 6-hour mechanical delay on that original flight, it was canceled.
And for 6 hours, those people sat on the tarmac. Is
yeah,
that right?
That is correct. Yeah, brutal.
Yeah.
So, but it was all worth it because this was my seventh week on the Silver Bank, and in the largest breeding and calving waters for North Atlantic humpbacks. And we had Gene Flipsy on one of our early episodes talking about Conscious Breath Adventures and the tours they run out there. They're week-long liveaboard tours, and they are one of three permitted companies to lead in-water encounters with humpback whales there. And of the 7 weeks that I have done, it's different every single time. They've all been incredible. And this was an amazing week out on the Silver Bank. Weather was pretty good. Visibility was pretty good in most places. And an incredible variety of different interactions, both at the surface and in water encounters. And it's just amazing. Every time, I never get over how many humpbacks are there. Yeah. It's just one of my favorite parts of the trip. And if you ever have a chance to go out and do these trips, my favorite parts is you do a crossing from the Dominican. It's about 70 miles out to the Silver Bank. And you do that crossing. Most trips, you'll do that overnight. And so you get onto the bank around 7 a.m. And one of my favorite things is to get up early, grab a cup of coffee at first light.
And be out there when you're coming onto the bank.
Absolutely. Yep. I mean, you experienced that on the two times that you've been there. And it's incredible. You just start seeing whales everywhere. Mm-hmm. Everywhere. It's just incredible how many. You always have in your back of your mind when you go, like, are there going to be whales there? And it's like, they're everywhere.
And just to interject really quickly, if you're hearing this and you're going, man, I want to experience that too. We did have one single space open up on our 2025 After the Breach humpback trip to the Silver Bank with Conscious Breath Adventures. So reach out to us if you're interested. Just a single seat. I think it's probably looking for a female share cabin. So get in touch. We'd love to have you.
It is so worth doing. It is just incredible. So the week that I was there this month, the first day, our first full day out on the water was, I knew then it was probably going to be like the top day. And it was, we had our first in-water encounter was with a singer, a male singer.
Oh, that's my favorite.
It's, you know, I haven't had that on every single trip. I've had it on most of the weeks that I've been there. But it is always amazing. And it's really cool for me because my first trip out there, I think, was 2011. And the song is completely different now.
Mm-hmm, sure.
It has evolved into a completely different sound. I have recordings from both years, and they're totally different. Mm-hmm. But there's nothing like being in the water right there, seeing them inverted. You see the fluke. and you're just getting blasted. I mean, you can hear it through the hull of the tender before you get in the water, but then you get in the water and it's like you're listening to the radio turned up.
Well, there was that experience last year that we had, and you were on the tender with me, I think. We stayed out. Gene, like, let us stay out a little bit late because we had this amazing, like, singer happening, and he was making a recording, and we were able to get in with the singer, and it was a little dark, and, you know, you couldn't quite see it until you were right there, and, oh, but the feeling of the feeling, song just, like, going through you was just amazing.
Yeah, if you're in the water at the right angle, and you're near the humpback, you will feel it from head to toe vibrating your body. It's pretty cool. And then that same day, we had a really good interaction with a mom and calf. Very good visibility where we were at that point, and just had an extended time in the water with those two. And
because it was a little later in the season, you're getting some of the older calves that are maybe a little bit more curious about who's in the water with them. Is that correct?
Yeah. And there's a lot of variability, and it, you know, sometimes it seems like it's tied to where you are in the season, but calves are born
throughout.
So, but it tends to be, at least in my short number of times out there, it does seem like the more recent births, they're so focused on mom that they don't even really notice you.
Sure.
But this was an older calf. And so at every surfacing, the calf would roll on its side so that it could see us with both eyes.
Oh, cool.
That's their best vision, and they use with both eyes. Is it kind of like in front and below them?
Mm-hmm.
So he or she was turning as it would come up, take a breath, and then barrel roll on its side to look out. And you could tell it was looking right over at us. So that's always cool. I mean, stayed with mom. We did have an interesting interaction one day where we were back on the tender at this point, but we had a calf that seemed very independent and was roaming off away from mom. And they weren't like far, but they were maybe a quarter mile away, and mom was not happy about that. And so she started throwing breach after breach after breach. And then the calf was tail slapping and peck slapping. And before it was like, all right,
like you, Marco Polo.
Well, hey, you get back here. Yeah. And the calf's like, no, you come here. And it was a neat interaction to watch that play out over 15 or 20 minutes until they came back together. But all of that percussive behavior attracted a male escort that the mom seemed to really, really like.
So the kid got his mom a date.
Yeah, exactly. That's a good way of looking at it. And the escort came over to her and was logging at the surface and exhaling. It wasn't trumpeting, but it was like gurgling and making emitting vocals and sounds through its exhales. And then the mom would come up right next to him and do the same thing. It was like, she seemed to really like him. And then we were with them for a little bit, and then it was time to go back to the mothership for lunch. But we did have one on that first day. We had a competitive group of males so if you're not familiar with a competitive group, you will have a female who kind of does some sexual advertising of, she'll peck slap and tail slap. She's trying to attract escorts,
sure,
letting them know, hey, I am available. And she will many times get multiple males coming in, and the males have to compete for her. And it can be violent. It can be really high energy. And this was hands down the most energetic, competitive group I've seen. There were around 9 or 10 males going for one female. It was high speed. We were doing probably 8 to 10 knots. We were with them for an hour and a half, and they were coming out of the water, like breaching and at the same time, April got a great photo, and I'll see if I can grab that from her and put it in the show notes. And Gene also got this, where two humpbacks were coming out of the water. It was like shoulder to shoulder, trying to shove each other out of the way. And you can see how they're angled into each other.
Oh yeah. I saw that photo.
Yeah. And it's like, okay, those two guys do not like each other. They're trying to push each other out of the way. It was really fascinating to spend that much time with such energetic whales, and they had taken us so far, and it's like, hey, we got to go. Mm-hmm. And who knows how long that went on for.
Yeah, I think my first trip to the Silverbank, we had a rowdy group, but that was the only time. And we, you know, when I lived in Maui, definitely had like several encounters with these big competition groups or rowdy groups. And it's just, like you said, incredible to witness that power and energy and bodies colliding. And you could see them like rubbing off the tubercles and like bleeding. And like some of them, not the ones that I saw, but I've seen results of this where they've, you know, ripped each other's dorsal fins either completely off or partially off, or
it's incredible.
It's wow.
It is wow. And it's, I mean, from an evolutionary standpoint, it makes a lot of sense. I mean, the strongest is going to get to, sure, to mate with the female, mm-hmm, but just imagine, it's just so interesting to watch that behavior and to really think about, imagine if every time that you, for a guy, every time you're trying to get a date, it is required that you participate in this massive bar brawl before you can get your first date. I mean, it's just amazing. They are, every time you see a rowdy group or competitive group, it's always different, and the pace is always dictated by the female. One of the coolest experiences I ever had was this week, and very stark contrast to the group I was just talking about. We had a female with an escort, a male escort, and he had four challengers, but the female wasn't really in a hurry to get anywhere. So she wasn't really going anywhere. She was hanging out with the escort, and they were just basically sitting still. And the four challengers were circling around, and we actually got in the water, and because they weren't moving, and it was really cool you could hear the males vocalizing. They were not singing, but they were vocalizing and, you know, grunting, and there were a couple bars that sounded like an alto saxophone, but they were definitely communicating and vocalizing. That was pretty cool. That was something that's pretty rare. And I'll try and post video. I do have some videos of and photos. I haven't really gone through,
sure,
and edited my videos yet, but I'll try and get those. So watch out for our Instagram and my Instagram. I'll be posting.
It's not like you came right back from the Silverbank and then were out on the water the very next day.
That is true. Yeah, I know. I've been out most days over the last week. But one more experience I will share from the Silverbank. I'm kind of selling this trip, but it was
sold.
It was one of the most special whale moments I think I've ever had. It was really cool, and it wasn't, well, so it was it was the second morning. It was Tuesday morning, and I woke up on Monday I woke up early. I woke up at 6 a.m. before first light. Mm-hmm. And I went up to the top deck and did yoga for 30 minutes. And it was like, wow, this is the coolest thing. I'm doing yoga. We have this beautiful sunrise happening, and you can see whales. You know, you're in a pose and you look and you can see exhales and backs and flukes, mm-hmm, in different directions. And you see some horizon breaches. And I'm like, this is so cool. I'm going to do this every morning. So Tuesday morning, I woke up and I was getting set up and I heard a really loud exhale. So I knew it was close, but it was still dark and you couldn't see. So I was struggling to see where it was coming from, and it was starting to get, you know, light was breaking, first light, and I could see three dorsal fins, and there was a mom, a calf, and a male escort, and they were right next to the boat. And so I'm watching them, and I think watched them for 45 minutes, didn't do yoga. They spent 45 minutes slowly circling the boat multiple times. At one point, the male escort spy hopped next to one of the tenders. And it was such a cool experience watching the sunrise and having these three whales right around the boat. And that derailed my yoga for the week. That was it.
Fair enough.
It was done.
Fair enough.
So I got up once to do it, even though I said I was going to do it every day. But that one experience of watching three whales just circling the boat at sunrise was really, really awesome.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Yeah, it's such a great trip, and I'm totally hooked on it. I did my first trip there in 2011 as a bucket list once in a lifetime. And
it's definitely not a once in a lifetime trip for a lot of people.
It hooks you in. I mean, when you go twice, then you're like, wow, this is different every time and it's just as good. And then you go a third time and it's like, I'm in, I'm done. Mm-hmm. Like I'll be here as many times as I can.
It's a big investment, but it's worth it.
Totally. And we've talked about this before. It's also life-changing. It really is a life-changing trip. Mm-hmm. And really one of the coolest things about it, and then we can talk about some of our recent sightings here. One of the coolest things about it is because you're so far away from shore, you don't have any shoreline visible. You're out there and you spend 8 hours a day out in the tenders, seeing humpbacks from the surface and getting in the water with them. And then you go back to the boat and you have happy hour and dinner, but there's still humpbacks all over the place that you're watching. So you're around whales all day long from sunrise to sunset. Mm-hmm. And by the second day, like you're so aware that you're in a really special place on this planet for them. And it's something that is culturally significant to them, probably has been for who knows how many thousands or millions of years. Mm-hmm. And you're just really aware that right now, like you're in a place on this planet that revolves around another species and has nothing to do with humans.
Yeah.
And it's really freaking cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, but it is great to be back here.
Yeah.
And we're
welcome back to the cold.
Yeah. Well, today was beautiful.
It was beautiful today.
Sunny.
Still kind of cold though.
Warm. I think it was nice and warm.
Yeah. Well,
I was doing work on one of the boats.
You were working.
I was working. Took a little bit of a spill.
A little bit of a wind chill. Oh yeah.
Yeah. I had a nice little fall while detailing one of the boats, but worked out okay. I'm sure I'm going to have a nice bruise.
Band-aids can be sent to Jeffrey. No, I'm just kidding.
I'm going to have a nice bruise somewhere on my rib cage, but all good. The boat looks great.
Perfect. All ready for anybody to come out and take a charter on it.
Yeah. I have our first charter on there tomorrow.
Sweet.
And, but it's been, we did have a little bit of a lull like in the second week of March, but we've been seeing lots of killer whales lately.
Yeah.
You had a trip today with the 46 Bs.
I just got off the water, ran right over to record this with you.
Yeah. Haven't even heard. How was your trip?
It was good. Yeah. We started out in the opposite direction, you know, going north because the herring spawn is happening up north and we've been getting a lot of critters moving in and out of the region. And, you know, by the time we got up to like Flat Top, we heard about this 2-hour-old report down south coming out of Admiralty Inlet, and it was the only lead. So I made a big U-turn and said, you know, it's not a guarantee. It's an old report, but let's give it a go. Perfect conditions. It was like glass the whole time.
We did that the other day. Yeah. We had a U-turn, and I said to people, like, hey, a U-turn, when you're on a whale-watching turn, a big U-turn is a good sign.
Good sign. So, yeah, we blasted down there, ended up that they were sighted again, thankfully, near Squim. And so we got out there and found them south of Protection Island. And it was the T-46Bs, my first sighting of them since, gosh, probably last September, I think.
Yeah, it's been a while since I've seen them. I love watching whales at Protection Island.
Yeah. Actually, I'm trying to think about when was the last time I saw them, because I had not seen T-46B2 since she gave birth to her newest her second calf. So T-46B2, Aquila, had another calf, her second one. Her first one passed away. Second one looks very spunky, at least it did today, but it was really nice to see her with her with a calf.
The last time that I'm sure I've seen them since, but it was last year with all the 46s off Protection Island. Mm-hmm. It was, I think, maybe not the very first sighting, but it was one of the first sightings where 46 was no longer there.
Oh, yeah, pretty early in the year,
and
I think.
Yeah, it was like, and they were all hanging
maybe,
out there.
Maybe about a year ago today.
Yeah, and I think we may have talked about that on one of the podcasts because it really felt like it was a celebration of life. They were down there all day. They didn't go anywhere, and they were just hanging out just south of Protection Island.
Yeah, it's funny because they were seen coming out of Discovery Bay, which is south of Protection Island, and then they like scooted west a little bit and then did a big U-turn and went back into the bay. And now I think we just checked the sightings reports and they're like at the bottom of Discovery Bay right now.
Yeah, maybe, who knows, maybe there's going to be a birth or something.
Waiting for the T-46s were in Puget Sound and have not been seen today. So maybe they're waiting for a family reunion.
Right, and the 46B1s were around.
Yeah, they've been around. We saw them the other night.
They are the toughest group of whales for me.
Yeah.
They just seem like every time I've ever been with them, they do long dives and they're always in a different direction than the way they went down on a previous surfacing.
Yeah. I mean, they were pretty good the other night. I thought they were doing long dives, but they were fairly consistent in their direction.
Fairly. It was like the most consistent I've ever seen them, and they were only fairly consistent.
You know, can't have it all.
They're my challenging whales.
Okay, for now.
And we had the 99s yesterday, and you got to see them. Well, and you got to see them later in the day.
I found them.
You found them later in the day, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Deep in the bay at Tsusha Island.
And another fantastic place to see whales.
And they were with the 124Ds.
Yes. And I was talking about this yesterday when we were with the 99s. They're one of the families I appreciate the most because it seems like no matter what they're doing, every time I see them, like they're always high profile. You always get good views of them. They seem to travel in a pretty tight group most of the time.
They were not tight when I saw them.
Really?
Mm-mm.
All right. Well.
Oh, well, they got together before we left, but they were not tight when I first saw them.
Yeah, they were in a really tight group. They were pretty energetic and social. They were traveling, but we had one surfacing that where they were all in a tight group and kind of took 99E and rolled her over.
Oh, cute.
Yeah, yeah. It was really a really nice encounter. And then the day before that, we were with the 36As.
Who are related to the 99?
Yes. Mm-hmm. So it's... 36 is the presumed mom of 99.
Correct.
Yeah, I'm getting better.
You're
at
getting
this.
There.
I'm
yeah.
getting better.
Yeah.
And 137 as well.
Yeah.
And obviously
A and B, 36.
36 A and B. So I had the 36 A's. Who else have we seen around? You had a great this when I was in the Silver Bank, you had a great stellar sea lion hunt. Near Moose Rocks.
Yes, as you mentioned, we had a run of days where we had no whales. Shout out to all the passengers that came out with me and just had were so great and had a wonderful time regardless because we saw a lot of cool wildlife, but, you know, had a slew of days where the whales were scarce, as wildlife is allowed to do, you know. But our first day with whales, yeah, we were actually up by turn point. It was another one of those where I'd gone north and then something got spotted in the opposite direction. And my passengers were totally gung-ho. They were like, we can be late. You know, we're in it for whatever you want to do. And so we did. We went down towards Race Rocks. All the boats had left. So it was like we were going to have to reacquire the whales. Thankfully, I had some help. Some intel from some of the previous boats and captains that had told me kind of like what they thought, where they thought they might be. And we got right into Race Pass and the whales popped up and that's where I thought they would be and where they thought they would be. And there they were. So it was the T-71Bs, who I don't see very often, and T-86A3 and her new calf.
Brand new calf, right?
Pretty new, pretty new. Yeah. Yeah.
Very cool.
Her first offspring, the first known at least. And they, you know, surfaced once as a group and then went down and then surfaced with a stellar sea lion that they were then proceeded to pursue for as long as we stayed and for quite a while after we left.
Yeah, the stellar sea lion hunts are pretty epic. Mm-hmm. And they are usually, it's typical that we can't see the whole thing.
Yeah, and this was a little stellar too. It was a juvenile for sure, but it was giving them a run for its money. And at one point was like coming towards the boats, like we had that experience earlier in the year, and I kind of like backed backed away as quickly as we could, as safely as we could, of course. But we don't want to interfere with a hunt and, you know, don't want a sea lion trying to jump into a boat or anything like that.
Yeah, that's the biggest thing that I think about. I think they're so, the whales are so focused and so good at what they do that I don't think anything really interferes with them. But I don't want a sea lion trying to get on the boat.
Yeah.
Especially, yeah. You had a juvenile, but a full grown 2,500 pound addition, sure, to the boat is really not a good idea.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. If they can hunt a sea lion right under a ferry.
Yeah, that was a couple hours, wasn't it? Or they delayed the ferry by 40 minutes or something like that.
Then we're
nothing. But you don't want the sea lion trying to get on the boat.
Right, we'd rather be a fly on the wall.
Exactly.
So, yeah, and then we did see the T-123s the next day after that.
Up in Trincomalee Channel.
Up in Trincomalee.
Stanley.
They've been around, kicking around. The T-46 proper, like younger kids, and T-122. So I guess her oldest and then her youngest, T-46 D, E, and F, have been down in Puget Sound.
Yeah.
And along with the T-124As.
Yeah, they've been down there for a while.
Over a week, I think.
Yeah, when I did my U-turn the other day, they were coming north, and it's like, hey, we might be able to get them. And I just knew in my gut, I was like, they're not going to come up. They're going to turn around. And we were lucky to get another report that was more doable. And sure enough, they did turn around. And they've been down there for a while.
Yeah, I think I heard the 124As are off Bainbridge Island today, this afternoon, and they were heading back north. So
it really seems like more and more that when groups of bigs go down into Puget Sound, that they stay down there for quite a bit. Not always, but there are groups that, like, they'll stay down there for weeks.
Oh, and guess who else is back we didn't mention yet?
I heard a rumor about this. I heard a rumor that we got snubbed
for
the second year in a row up here in the San Juan Islands.
T-65A and her crew.
Yeah. How, is it the whole crew?
As far as I know. Yeah. I haven't heard otherwise.
This is the second year in a row. So she used to stop in the San Juan Islands for a week or so and then, you know, bounce around, maybe down to Puget Sound. But the last 2 years, it's like straight down there.
Straight down there and a little bit early, because it used to be like the first week of March that she'd first week of April she'd show up.
So yeah, a couple weeks early.
Mid to late March.
That's amazing that she snubbed us twice.
I'm not surprised at all. Not surprised at all.
Well, so it does seem, and maybe this is kind of going along with, maybe the herring spawn is quieting down a bit, but it just seems like right now we're having a big inflow of a lot of different families of bigs.
Yeah, I think, I don't know. I've still seen a lot of photos from the herring spawn up north that's happening, but you know, these whales are constantly moving, right? Even with a huge food source, they don't need to stay up in that area because there's so much food everywhere. So they can, you know, get their fill of sea lions that have just chowed down on a bunch of herring, and then they can move on and come down here. And who knows where they'll be next. Hopefully. Well, we just both got a ping, so we have more whales that just showed up.
Just showed up literally right outside of Friday Harbor.
As we started
the T-100s. Yeah, the T-100s are literally right outside Friday Harbor. They're literally right outside of Friday Harbor.
Nice.
Right now.
All right, perfect. Well, not sure how I missed those guys on my way home, but
it happens. It happens to all of us.
It'll happen.
It's not easy to find whales, and it's very easy to miss them.
Mm-hmm. Even when you're looking.
Even when you're looking. If you're not looking, you're definitely not going to find them.
Right.
So, yeah, lots of different families are around right now, and J-Pod did a flyby on Friday. Yeah, it was Friday. They did a quick flyby on their way up north. So, yeah, I think it's turning into another really good spring with bigs. And we've got tours scheduled every day from here on.
Yeah.
I mean, until, you know, fall. Not like for eternity.
You never know. Coming up in August, we have a photo workshop. So we have a couple special tours coming up. But we'll have our first all-day tour through Maya's next month, at the end of the month for Earth Day. We've done that for, I don't even know how many years now.
Oh, I think it's been...
at least a decade.
I think it's been close to 10 years.
Yeah.
If not 10 years. And then we have another all-day tour scheduled in July. We have one in July this year.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And
July
then,
22nd, I think.
Yeah. And then most Sundays in August and September and
into early October
on Sundays. A couple of them, I think one or two of them might be on a Saturday.
Sweet.
But
they're a lot of fun.
They are.
And they fill awesome. Up fast too. So if you're interested in joining them, like I'm already seeing a lot of them.
Yeah, they're filling up. They are filling up very quickly. I think the one in April is full, but I'm not sure. But yeah, they do fill up quickly. They're always fun. They're always different. You never know. But obviously being on the water all day gives you your best chance of seeing whales and sometimes multiple groups or multiple species.
Yeah. August 24th and 25th, we do have our photo workshop. So that's two full day tours in back to back. And I just had someone on our tour today sign up for it. So we have, I think, like 5 seats left on that tour. You can book one day, you can book both days. We provide lunch and you'll join Jeff and I out on the water and we'll go out and see if we can beat last year's tally on whales. So we
had, right.
30 something.
30 some, yeah. And yeah, that was 30 some unique whales, different groups each day.
Mm-hmm.
And there was, I think, some overlap between the days, but
we had a lot of whales.
Yeah, 30 some unique individuals, and who knows what we'll have this August.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to that again.
Me too. A couple other items that we wanted to just touch on. We can't really speak broadly on to what's going on, but I know it's been in the
social media news.
Very kind of sad news coming out of Vancouver Island. T109A3 did live strand yesterday and unfortunately did not make it. Our friend Jared Towers, who's been on, is up there. Her 2-year-old calf is still alive, and they're doing their best to reunite them with the rest of the family. So we don't have details. We don't know too much at this point. By the time this episode comes out in the next day or so, there might be more details, but we did want to bring that up. If you're looking for more information, I would definitely check out like Bay Cetology. You can find it in, I'm sure any kind of whale related social media page might have some information about that, but, very sad news, does happen, you know, in any population, but always sad to lose a whale that we've seen and we know.
Yeah.
And especially when that has a young calf.
And a young mom. Yeah. She's a young mom. It's really, really heart-wrenching.
Yeah, it is. Our hearts go out to all those people that did their very best to, you know, help her and save her, and just circumstances weren't in her favor, unfortunately.
Yeah, so. really unfortunate. And I mean, it's a reminder that Biggs killer whales, I saw this comment on Facebook, and you know, they live a life that's full of risk, like everybody, right?
Mm-hmm.
But they get into risky situations frequently, and sometimes a wrong turn, wrong move, or just unfortunate circumstances can have tragic outcomes.
Yeah, it can, So sometimes it doesn't work out. Sometimes it does. There's things that we can learn from it. You know, and sometimes there's not anything to learn from it, right? It's just a tragedy that happened. So,
And there were so many people there trying to help, and there's nothing really that they could do.
Can't imagine how traumatizing that would be for those there. But our hearts really go out to those people that did their best. And yeah, if we learn more about this or have any other, information come up, we'll talk about it in a future episode. But very sad news. Out of Vancouver Island.
Yeah, never easy to hear about. And like you said, especially when it's a whale that we've seen many times and mm-hmm. we know, and a young whale, young mom,
mm-hmm.
really, really sad. So it's we can't end the podcast with a tragic note. So we did get a couple requests by email for us to talk about a few things. So we're going to shift gears a little bit here. And one of the requests was a Meet the Matra line, which we said we were going to do on every episode.
I'm so sorry.
And it's not your fault. We just have so much to talk about. But it's a family that has been spending lots of time down in Puget Sound. And it was somebody that has been watching them from shore and would want some information. And it also is one of Sarah's favorite families of whales.
They are. And
I mean, everybody loves the 124As.
Everybody?
Well, if
that's fine. They're deserving of everybody's love.
They're a very lovable family of whales.
They are. Yeah, and I think we've talked about this on previous episodes, Jeff, and if not, I know that you and I have talked about this, but there are some families that you have a soft spot for, that you have favorites for, that you just can't even put your finger on why you love them so much. And I am just always happy to see the 124As. Like, I get excited when I think that there's a possibility that I'm going to see the 124As. They're just that family for me. And just a really cool family. So mom is T124A, kind of part of this very prolific family of Biggs killer whales, the T124s.
So yeah, one of our power families.
Yeah, and we just saw her sister T124D yesterday,
yeah.
But she was born in 1984 and has had 7 calves, 5 of which are still alive. So she's
good mom.
Her oldest daughter, too, one of my favorite whales, even though we're not supposed to have favorites, T124A1 Bonapartes, just had her first calf, or was seen with her first known calf, I should say.
She's old for...
She's quite...
Not old for a calf, but old for a first
for known a first calf. Known calf. So, you know, there's always some, like, trepidation, right, when you have an older female with that first known calf, right, because the likelihood is that she's had calves before and they just haven't made it. So we'll keep our fingers crossed for this little one, but they've been down in Puget Sound, as we talked about just a little while ago. And, you know, has T124A4 with her kiddo, who we have seen on several occasions, though not this year yet, but she was one of our first whales that we saw go through Jorgensen Pass.
Yeah. Yeah. Last year. Was it last year? Yeah.
2 years ago.
2 years ago.
Really cool. That memory sticks with me. And she's kind of dispersed, though. She's been back with the family down in Puget Sound. She'll kind of go off on her own with her kid and then come back and rejoin.
Are the 124A2s down there?
I don't know.
Yeah, I love the 124A2s.
So T124A, her second oldest, is a daughter, and T124A2. And she has 2 or 3 kids now, 2 known, I think 2 kids, and has been off on her own. Like, she's dispersed from mom. She doesn't hang out with mom all the time, but, you know, they, just like any other extended family, will sometimes get back together. But she is a really cool whale.
Yeah. I love them.
She looks a lot like her mom too. So the family itself, like, there's some resemblance in their dorsal fins with that kind of wide base and then the rounded top, rounded tip of the fin. And I think that, like, 124A2 and 124A and even 124A1 a little bit kind of all resemble each other. And they have really cool eye patches too.
Yeah, they're a cool family. I can see why they're your favorite.
Yeah.
Even though you're not supposed to have one.
Not supposed to, but...
I don't know where you got that, where you're,
I can't reveal my sources.
You're, I mean, why wouldn't you have favorites?
Because there's a myth that when you have favorites, that those whales tend to die.
Oh, I don't believe in that.
But anyway, so 5 surviving kids, T124A1 and 2 that we talked about, A4 that we talked about, and then she has a younger son, T124A6. And T124A7 is her youngest, born in 2021. And it's a little girl.
That's why it's just a myth. It's not. You can have favorites. It's okay.
Well, I do. So. So that's good. Really interesting thing, and kind of tying back into what we were just talking about with T109A3. T124A's third offspring, female, T124A3. Actually passed away in November of 2020, and she was a whale that was found stranded, beach cast, though she had likely died before washing ashore up in Southeast Alaska, leaving behind a young calf as well. And that calf actually did survive for about a year afterwards. It was with grandma and aunts and uncles. So there is some hope that, you know, if this calf, despite being fairly young, could get back with its family, that there's a good shot for it. So we'll keep that hope, keep our fingers crossed for that little one. But yeah, that's the T124A pod there, or T124A Matriline. And they're seen a lot down here around southern Vancouver Island. There is, I think, even a sighting of them off the Washington coast. And then they're seen a lot up in like Glacier Bay, Juneau, southeast Alaska. You're just kind of glazed over there.
Yeah,
you tired?
I did. I think I'm tired. Yeah. I'm just thinking about, like, you know, I'll have to think about who my favorites are. But the 124As
are... The 37As.
37As were for a while.
Oh, they've fallen out of top status.
Yeah, I haven't been seeing them as much the last couple of years. Could be the 34s and 37s. They've really grown up.
They are cool.
But yeah, I'll have to give that some thought and get back to
you. We'll revisit that on the next episode, maybe.
Definitely. But it is cool that there's been so many different families around. And then the other thing that I wanted to mention, and I've lost count, but we've already had an amazing number of new calves in the bigs population already in 2024.
Six confirmed.
Hey, we're just finishing the first quarter and we've had six or seven.
Yeah.
It's
so any guesses on how many we'll see before the end of the year?
I think it's definitely going to be over 20.
Over 20?
That's what I'm putting money on. Which is amazing. Yeah. Think about it, like 20 new. It's just amazing how many whales in the bigs population are under the age of like 15.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
Most of the population is sub-adult, right?
Yeah. And that's why you see these families like the 124As, and it's like it's all little fins.
Yeah, the 46Bs, like tons of smaller fins.
Yeah, lots of families that are like that where it's all little fins because they're all young. Pretty cool to watch.
Yeah, I'm going to have to think about how many calves I think will be confirmed in 2024.
It'll be interesting to watch. And, you know, soon we'll start seeing some humpback calves coming back with with moms. Yeah. We did get another email that somebody was asking a question.
Yeah, someone had. So we just did our frequently asked question, but a friend of ours, Ed, did want to ask if we've ever seen a superpod. And I think we can end with kind of some of those happy memories or at least kind of wrap up the episode with that. So I know we both have.
You've seen far more.
Well, just I've been doing it a long time.
I've been,
and we've seen them together too.
We have. Was that, I do remember, I think it was a super pod.
It was.
The bachelorette party.
Yes. I like funny. How we both start laughing as we think about this.
Yeah. It was very funny. We had a trip. This was in 2016 or 17. It was in December. It was mid-December, and we had a bachelorette party.
I think it was January, actually, wasn't it?
It may have been. I know it was cold. And we had a bachelorette party. It was a private charter. And they were great. They were like, we don't care what we see. We'd love to see some sea lions, but whatever's out there, which is the best attitude to go with.
It is.
With not just whale watching, but any kind of wildlife encounter, because no one's in control of it other than the animals. So you're going to get what you get. And so if you go in with low expectations or just knowing like, hey, I'm going to be happy with whatever I get.
It was January 11th, 2019.
Wow, I didn't realize it was that late. And we had a super pod just southeast of Victoria.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a new calf.
Yep, it was L124.
Wow.
First seen from the King 5 or one of those news helicopters had flown over the southern residence in Puget Sound. And I know I did, and I know that several other people were watching and going, oh, that's a really little calf in there. And mom, L77, Maisha, has a very distinct saddle patch as well. So we were all very excited to see that little munchkin.
That was a fun day. And it did seem like L77 was bringing L124 around to all the boats.
Yeah.
It was very funny. Because when we were out there, we didn't move very much.
No, they were just really just sitting there.
Yeah, because they were just doing circles and different social groups and just really not going anywhere. So we didn't go anywhere. And we should post some pictures in the show notes because I remember that day we had just epic lighting. Mm-hmm. At that time of year, it's like almost all day it's that late afternoon lighting. and the sun was like peeking out from behind the Olympic Mountains. We
had Baker was out.
Yeah, it was just a beautiful, beautiful. So I got some of the best photos I've ever gotten that day.
Do you want to know the memory I have the most from that trip?
I think I know where you're going, but yes, I do.
It was the portable boombox that they brought on board, and they were blasting Spice Girls. And as we were like first seeing this brand new calf that we were all eagerly anticipating and like so happy to see the Southern residents have a new calf and Spice Girls blaring in the background, which is fine. But I was just like, just for like the next 10 minutes, can we turn it down? Because I don't want my first memory.
Did you ask them that?
I did. My first memory of this calf to be Spice Girls.
But it is.
It is.
That is so funny.
And they were lovely and so wonderful. And it's just funny to have that like soundtrack in the back of my head with this super pod.
That's awesome. And you've seen far more super pods than I have, but I have seen a few, and they all seem to kind of fit that same flavor of you're not really going anywhere because they're not going anywhere. They're spending a lot of time doing circles and socializing in different mixed groups.
Yeah. So the other one that I know you would have seen that stands out to me was when J57 was born, the first day that J57 was seen in 2020. And
oh, yes. When
J's came down from the north and K's and L's came in and just...
And they were so kind to get together on the U.S. side of the border because the border was closed.
Yeah. Well, J35 had the kid over on the Canadian side, but we could see it through binoculars.
Yes.
And then she did bring it. They all came to the west side, and my memory really is actually from sunset on the west side.
Also beautiful
and
lighting.
Listening to the hydrophone and just watching all of these whales like milling and calling and it was just magic. So there is something really like ethereal about Southern resident super pods, and it's sad to me that we're like losing this, you know, but hopefully they're doing it. You know, it's not about us seeing them, but it's about them exchanging this like very culturally important kind of ritual almost.
Well, I think they are having them. Not having them in the inland waters.
Right. And that's,
but they're happening off the outer coast.
Sure.
But we don't, I mean, I remember, you know, from what people talk about, betting what month was it going to be, April or May, when we had the first super pod in the inland waters. And now it's like, well, we're not even going to see Southern residents in April and May. Mm-hmm. And we don't really see super pods in here. We don't see K's and L's coming in very, very often.
Yeah.
Especially during our whale watching season.
Mm-hmm. It's really changed.
Yeah. And it's funny. I think we kind of hit that point in every episode, and that's how much it has changed. It really is a major point of, and you know, the talk used to be mostly about super pods, and you'd never talk about bigs, and now it's all about bigs, and we don't see the Southern residents. I mean, the flip side of that is that we're learning so much about the bigs that we didn't know before, which is really, really neat.
Yeah. Actually, yesterday I had the privilege of giving a how to identify killer whales kind of like intro to the Bigs 201 class through Orca Behavior Institute. And it was really fun to just present to them on that and to like meet all these people that are so like in love with killer whales and have... Some of them, you know, are what I'll call the old guard. Like they grew up, you know, with the Southern residents, just like I did. And some of them, and a lot of our like new naturalist, new quote unquote, you know, younger, really like the bigs is all they know. Like
right.
That's what they know. And Southern residents are kind of obscure. And it's so baffling to me, but like, wonderful too, because I love the bigs and I'm glad that people are like excited to see the bigs, because I remember in that transition it wasn't always like, you know, better than nothing. Bigs were better than nothing.
Yeah, so. Yeah. During those early years of things changing, yeah, people would be disappointed if they saw Biggs and not Southern mm-hmm. residents. And I can identify with the newer naturalists and the people that only know Biggs, because I really got here at the very tail mm-hmm. end of
sure
of the Southern residents' old behaviors and old patterns of presence in the Salish Sea.
Yeah,
I feel very fortunate that I got to see it at all. But it really was, it was like the last years where you had Southern residents here mm-hmm. most days in the summer.
Right.
And that was like very early on for me.
Right, right.
So yeah, I can identify with, and yeah, anybody coming out here now and learning about this stuff, you're going to learn about Biggs way more.
Mm-hmm.
So really interesting.
And I think very important to like recognize that we are talking a lot more about Biggs. We're learning a lot more about Biggs just because that's who we're seeing, but it is still like all connected, right? So having a healthy ecosystem for the Biggs is going to lend itself to having a healthier ecosystem that hopefully would support salmon and Southern residents. And also we just need to make sure that like, even though we're not seeing them, we're still talking about them,
absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
That they don't just get kind of like brushed under the rug for, you know, whatever governmental organizations are going to kind of control that story about them, and whether that's good or bad, I'm not going to speak, you know, say that. But I'm just saying we as people who love these whales, who've grown up around these whales, who have spent our whole lives advocating for them, we need to talk about them and continue to talk about them and what will help them.
Absolutely. And I think a major point that we talk about quite a bit is this booming population of Biggs killer whales. Mm-hmm. And all these, we just talked about all these families that are young and the majority of the population is subadult. It shows what is possible for a population of killer whales when they have an abundance of food.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we see that in other populations too.
Exactly.
Hopefully we'll be chatting with some folks that can kind of lend some insight into those populations in future episodes, and really looking forward to sharing that information with you guys.
Yeah, and check out our website, afterthebreachpodcast.com, if you're interested in the August photo workshop. Send us an email if you're interested in a single female share in a cabin for our Silverbank trip next February.
And we do have a wait list going, so there's a few people on it already, but you know, never hurts. So if you're interested in going and that maybe doesn't fit for you, you're two people or more, still email us. And,
absolutely.
And, you know, if something opens up, we'll let you know. Or if we put another trip together, which I think we're planning to put another trip together to the Silver Bank.
Yeah, we definitely want to know interest, whether it's for 2025, we'll 2026, whenever it is. So, yeah, send us a message.
Yeah. Well, thanks, guys, so much. If you enjoyed listening, feel free to share this comment. If you have questions for Jeff or I, feel free to reach out to us through Instagram, through email, through our website, however you'd like to just get a hold of us. And thank you so much for joining us. We really, really appreciate it.
And everybody, make sure, no matter what you do, stay safe out there.
Stay safe out there. Thanks so much for listening to this episode of After the Breach Podcast. If you've enjoyed it and want to help us out, please share this with your friends, family, and any other whale-loving folks you can think of. We would also love to hear your feedback, so please leave us a review wherever you listen to podcasts. If you have topics you're interested in and would like to hear on the show, please send us an email. We'd love to hear your thoughts. You can find us on Instagram as @AfterTheBreach and on Facebook as After the Breach Podcast. And if you'd like to go whale watching with us, then come on up to San Juan Island, Washington State. We run tours with Maya's Legacy Whale Watching, departing just steps away from the ferry landing in beautiful downtown Friday Harbor. It's a great destination for a day trip or multiple days and offers some of the best whale and wildlife viewing in the world. We would love to take you out on the water to see the amazing whales we talk about on our podcast. You can book a tour through the company website at www.sjiwhalewatch.com and make sure to mention you're a podcast listener when you book. Thanks again for listening, and remember, stay safe out there.